Hi, and welcome to the Positivity Podcast. This podcast focuses on connecting with people from all different backgrounds and walks of life from around the world. Throughout this podcast, you'll listen to people's stories, their experiences, the trials and tribulations that they've overcome, why they do what they do, and current trends. Topics may vary from personal development, mindset, people sharing stories, authors, coaches, ex-military personnel, professionals, and everyday people in walks of life. I hope you enjoy this podcast as I aim to connect with people for them to share their story, their experiences, and why they do what they do, because I have a deep interest in humans and providing valuable content to the audience. If you would like to be on this podcast, you can email me at thepositivitypodcast@gmail.com in the notes. You can connect with me on social media in the notes, positivity94 on the Instagram. If there's any tips, any advice, any feedback, I would highly appreciate it. So let's get into the show. Thank you for your support, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Subscribing really helps, and you know, I appreciate all your support. Hope you enjoy this show.
Tuning in, trying to find out how to win. Go along and tell a friend. Marathon, you know the game. Keep on running, never end. Getting better, make amends. Adam got it, Adam got it, Adam got it, Adam got it. Positivity.
Right, Kevin, it's a pleasure to have you back on the podcast today. How are you doing? It's been a while.
Hey, Adam. Always excited for another installment of our episodes together. So thank you so much for bringing me on.
Yeah. No, you're welcome. It's great to have you back, and we always have great chats together. And the topic today we thought about talking about is, you know, managing emotional states and, you know, decision making and, you know, overwhelm and, you know, like our mindset and our thoughts. You know, it all kind of links in together, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. One thing, you know, we often, when we're setting up a podcast, we ask each other what should the topic be for this particular episode. And something that has been on my mind recently is, as you said, managing the emotional state, and what to do when we get into states of emotional overwhelm that then impede our decision-making, impede our ability to be logical and clear in thought. Because when you are making decisions from an emotional place, you're saying things you don't mean, you're doing things you don't mean, and you don't get to enjoy whatever it is that you're doing because you're overwhelmed emotionally. And so this is also tied to a larger question of, how do we change the way that we feel? You know, because feelings are such an ephemeral thing. It's very difficult to pinpoint the way that we feel about this, what the feeling is. Is it anger? Is it sadness? Is it anxiety? Is it frustration? Is it shame? Is it guilt? You know, there are so many different feelings that a person can experience. And some of them are very complex emotions. Some of them are a combination of feelings. And then the question becomes, how do we change that? So that's something that's been on my mind recently that I've been dealing with personally and also with some family issues that I've been having.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're really good topics. And I think, like, you know, like you said, handling your emotional state, you know, your thoughts, overwhelm, you know, your energy levels, it's
like an ongoing process, I think, through life on how we manage all that. And I think, like you said, life will throw certain situations or curveballs our way sometimes. And, you know, we can't make, I don't think, probably the most effective decisions or deliver to our best level if, you know, sometimes our emotional state is affected or our clarity is, you know, a bit clouded. I mean, that's, things happen in life and, you know, part sometimes normal, but I think it depends what you probably what situation you put yourself in. I think if it's normal to feel under pressure to do a presentation, for example, but it's just like, you know, emotional state, isn't it, in that moment. And I think if you focus on being present in the moment, you got less anxiety, more clarity, but it's not always that easy, is it? Especially if you've got different things going on.
Yeah. So, you know, when I say changing our feelings and managing our emotions, there's no implication that that is necessarily easy to do, nor is there an implication that those emotions are not valid or that they shouldn't be felt, right? Part of being human is feeling the full range of human emotions. And there are some times where in order to get through an emotion, the only way is to feel it. The only way to process an emotion and a negative feeling is literally to allow it to be there and not fight it. You know, like in meditation, there's an old adage that says, well, don't just sit there, do something about it. But in meditation, we learn, don't just do something, sit there, right? Sit with the anxiety, sit with the negative emotion and learn how to tolerate it, learn how to tolerate that discomfort. And in that way, it actually dissipates on its own and you allow it to pass, kind of like a tree branch, you know, passing through a river. It's this big, ugly tree branch in an otherwise very pretty, clear, calm river. If you reach into the tree branch, if you reach into the river and try to pull out the tree branch, the branch and the flow of the river are going to suck you in. So sometimes we have to feel the emotion and let it be there. Cry, ask for a hug, you know, be sad for a few days, whatever it is. But then there are other times when a negative emotion has persisted longer than its shelf life, right? And we are perpetuating the negative emotion through our thoughts and through our behavior. And at that point, the negative emotion has already run its course, but we're perpetuating it now unnecessarily, right? So for example, you know, you hear of somebody who goes through a divorce, God forbid, and 10 years later, they are still rageful and angry and doing things to get back at their spouse. And maybe they're drinking too much, you know, or smoking too much, or they're in a bad financial position or whatever. Well, a lot of that emotional decision-making is not necessary. You've held on to anger. You've held on to whatever the negative emotion is that arose in that state, which again is completely normal. And now it is impeding your progress in your life. And now it's making it harder for you to have a happy and healthy life. So when that happens, when the negative emotion has run its course and it is basically just wreaking havoc on your life, there's a point of diminishing returns when it comes to talking about the emotion and trying to process it, right? That's something that most people will do in therapy. And depending on the situation, that will be very helpful. But there's a certain point at which the way that you change your feeling is not by working on the feeling. The way you change the feeling is by changing your behavior, changing the words that you use, and changing the way that you think, right? Because if you've been angry or upset about something for 4 or 5 months, you've probably talked about that. you've probably tried to process that emotion to death. You've been working on that feeling for 5 whole months and it's not going away, right? In fact, with the language that you're using, you may actually be exacerbating it and making it worse. So at that point, once that anger or that sadness or grief or guilt or whatever it is has already run its natural course, but it's still present, now we have to get you to change the way you think and change the way you behave, right? We change your thoughts and we change your actions, and then the feeling will follow. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, no, it makes perfect sense, yeah.
So there are, you know, I want to be clear that I'm not, you know, we're not trying to be the emotion police here. Like, we're not suggesting that you should run away from your emotions or immediately jump to fix them. There are some times where the best way to fix a negative emotion is just to let it be there. But then there are other times where the emotion isn't going away by itself. And the way to fix the feeling is actually to fix your habits, fix your behavior, fix the way you're thinking about it and think differently about it, and think and fix the way that you're describing it, fix the language that you're using to describe yourself and the situation and the world, et cetera.
Yeah, no, I think that they're really great points. And I think, like you said, with, you know, almost like a snowball effect of, you know, things happening in life, like you said, with, you know, with a tree branch going down a river, you know, like if people, you know, if we don't deal with things, we kind of hold on to it and it just kind of cascades over time, and what was maybe something minor might build and grow and become big because we haven't dealt with it. Or even, you know, like you said, people have had, you know, divorces and messy breakups, and then years later, you know, still might maybe resentful or angry or upset, you know, because I'm not dealt with it. And it's almost like, you know, kind of holding that luggage, carrying that luggage, you know, and then something else happens and you're carrying that luggage. And that, like you said, the main point of focus is, you know, looking at your behavior, you know, your thinking, your mindset, what, you know, what relationship have you got with those emotions? Sometimes people might, you know, I know I did it when I had PTSD in the past, you know, I was kind of getting frustrated with, you know, why me? Why am I feeling this? Some people might almost kind of feel like a victim almost to the emotions. But like you said, the main steps are looking at your mindset, your behavior, and those, you know, having, addressing your, you mean, you know, your emotions and your behaviors. I mean, that's like you said, the main important thing, and taking accountability.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we always talk about the importance of taking accountability. That's something you and I both believe in wholeheartedly. But I think that it's amazing how often our behaviors are exacerbating our emotions. They are making our emotions worse. We're behaving in certain ways that we think are going to alleviate a negative feeling, but it's making it 10 times worse. So for example, if you've got massive anxiety, you have a boatload of emotions underneath that anxiety. So what do you do to deal with the anxiety? Well, when you get home, you have a glass of wine or you smoke some weed, right? But that's putting a Band-Aid on a battle wound. And every time you do that, your anxiety is building up and festering and getting worse. And then you need more alcohol or more weed to alleviate the feeling. And so in this way, we are going to the source of a problem, seeking a solution. We, you know, it's like you're going to, you know, a disease trying to find a cure. And, you know, for example, alcohol and weed are depressants. They make people depressed. So a person who's depressed goes to alcohol or weed, not realizing that those things are depressants. A person who is lonely or anxious about their love life goes and looks at photos of their ex, or goes and has sex with some random person from Tinder, not realizing that doing that is going to leave you feeling more lonely and more anxious, right? So the very emotion that you are trying to get out of, your behavior is actually exacerbating and perpetuating, right? Now, I don't say this as a gotcha. I don't say this to like point my finger at people and say, this is what, you know, you're doing wrong, because I used to do this in my life too. But the thing that I try to do now is when I have a persistent negative emotion, like when I am feeling consistently mad or sad or anxious, or I'm overthinking, or I have all kinds of worry or whatever, I stop and I ask myself, well, which one of my behaviors is making this thing better? And which one of my behaviors is making this emotion worse, right? Certain behaviors like meditating, going to therapy, going to coaching, exercising every day, you know, those things are going to make it better. Other behaviors like drinking, smoking, sex, talking about it all day long, complaining all day long, isolating yourself to try to run away from the problem, sleeping, you know, working 16-hour days, all of these ways of escaping the negative emotion, these are things that actually make that negative emotion worse. So there will never be a time in life when we can escape negative emotion completely, but we can develop our toolbox and our arsenal to manage those negative emotions. And at the very least, for the love of God, we can make sure that our behavior isn't actually making those emotions worse.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And I think, like you said, people have things going on. I might have things going on emotionally in themselves and are seeking things that they think are going to solve the problem, but are actually making that emotional problem 100 times worse. And, you know, this, you know, when we're seeking I was thinking about this actually the other day. You know, people seek things externally to solve internal problems. Like, and when you said it's, you know, it happens within us. We have to internally look at what the emotion is and how we're going to deal with it in our behaviors. And it's within ourselves, but yet people don't feel like that they can always solve it internally or don't know how. So look at external things to maybe deal with it, but it's not the right thing to do. And, you know, even like avoidance almost. I've worked with some people in the past where I've presented opportunities for them to have help and support, and they don't want to go there. Don't want to go there. It's like avoidance. Or they might play video games. And there's nothing wrong with video games. I play video games. But if you're playing video games and you know that there is something you need to deal with, but you're not dealing with it, it's avoidance, isn't it? And people might be doing this and they're not always aware of it. You think?
Yeah, that is such a great point about, you know, the avoiding the help that is presented to you. And look, we're not vilifying any one thing here, right? We're not saying that alcohol is terrible or weed is terrible or sex is terrible or video games are terrible. You know, there's such a thing as too much of anything. You know, you could do too much therapy. You could do too much exercise. You could do too much journaling, you know, and in that case, it will make the problem worse, right? So it's when you're doing too much of something that you get into hot water. And it's when the behavior that you are engaging with, you are using it as a crutch or as a band-aid, right? If you work a nice 8-hour day and then you come home, you have a good meal, you know, you exercise, you spend some time with your loved ones, and then before you go to bed, you play an hour of video games, who cares? You know, that's a very different situation from somebody who wakes up at noon, smokes a joint, has no job, is completely lost in life, spends the next 4 or 5 hours playing video games until they take a nap, right? And just constantly, it's like everything that they do is trying to avoid or escape. And the fascinating thing is that person in that example is doing everything in their power to avoid and escape discomfort. They're trying to avoid and escape negative emotion and their problems. But by avoiding and escaping, they have actually created more pain for themselves. Because nobody enjoys living in a depressive state where you're playing video games and doing drugs and eating, you know, crap all day long. Nobody enjoys that. That's a very painful, lonely existence. So you got into that to avoid whatever emotional pain or trauma is there in the first place, or avoid whatever responsibilities you have that are overwhelming for you. But by trying to avoid that discomfort, you have now created for yourself a situation that is equally uncomfortable, if not worse, right? Wouldn't it have been better to take on the discomfort of addressing your issues, working through your stuff, being responsible, paying your bills, having obligations? All that shit's uncomfortable. Nobody, you know, enjoys doing that stuff. It's really difficult on a day-to-day basis, right? But that's like 5 minutes or 5 hours of discomfort, as opposed to day in, day out, running away, avoiding, refusing help, and just following deeper and deeper into your negative emotion. I mean, that's way more uncomfortable and way more painful to me than the former. And I can speak about this candidly because I've been on both sides. You know, I've been so depressed that I didn't leave my room for like 36 hours at a time, you know? And I've also been where I am now, where I have lots of obligations and a happy and healthy life. And, you know, I have to work through my stuff every day and I have to fulfill my small commitments every day and stuff like that. And yes, it's uncomfortable and it's hard. It's called adulting, you know, it's difficult. But this, I would take this over being sad and being in a perpetual state of negative emotion and trying to avoid this. I would take it any day of the week. And when you've been on both sides, which I know you have as well, you can say that. You know, when you've been in the depressive state and when you've been in a good state, you can say that in the good state, there's a lot of discomfort and challenges, but you would take these discomfort and these challenges over the depressive state 7 days a week.
Yeah, most definitely. I think, you know, you said the, you know, like life can be difficult and is difficult, and it's there's a lot of growth in that place, isn't there, of, you know, showing up, getting on with what you need to do and doing your best at it, you know, paying your bills and, you know, all of that, all those things are difficult. But like you said, it's far more difficult putting things off and being stuck or staying stuck and not addressing things. And, you know, that it's like, you know, almost like short-term pain for long-term pleasure almost. I think you have to jump through those hoops and make a choice ultimately of what is it that you want to do. Because like you said, you've been in that place, I've been in that place. And, you know, for me, I was like, I want to deal with this. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to figure it out. How can I use this, you know, to push myself forward and things like that? And it, like you said, by people think they're doing themselves a favor by avoiding and procrastinating, doing other activities, engaging other things. They think that that's the way forward to deal with it. But, you know, like you said, you're only building yourself a bigger mountain almost to climb, because that the ripples from what you're doing kind of cascade, and then a month turns into a year and a year might turn into whatever else. And then that issue, if you know, then becomes a bigger issue compared to just dealing with it then, I think.
Yeah. What you said about, you know, delaying gratification, short-term pain for long-term pleasure, I really believe that life is a game of being hard now so that it can be easy later. And the trick of this is that, okay, well, when is it easy? Never. Like, when do you get to the point where it can be easy later? Is it when you're retired? No. Is it when you're 40? No. Is it if you become an internet billionaire? No. Is it when you're 80? Nope. You know, every single day that you're alive, you're playing the game. If you're smart, then every day that you're alive, you should be playing the game of today is difficult so that tomorrow can be easier, right? This year is difficult so that next year can be easier. And it's an ongoing game that has no end. But this way, every single decision that you make today makes the rest of your week or the rest of your month a little bit better, right? So, you know, you're delaying gratification until tomorrow or the next week or the next month or the next year. And in order to do that, you can't run away from the pain and the obligations and the responsibilities and the scary things today. Because this way, then tomorrow, you actually get to enjoy the gratification. And then you do something else that's difficult so that the next day you get to enjoy the gratification. And then on that day, you do something else that's difficult. You know, this is why they say, do one thing a day that scares you, or do one thing a day that's really difficult, because the next day or the next week or the next month, it's going to pay off. And you might look at this and say, well, if it never gets easy, then what's the point? You know, sounds like a big scam to me. Yeah, I understand. You know, if it never gets easy, then sure, you could say that there's no point. But the alternative is only living for the moment, only living for today, and not thinking about the rest of your life or your future or how your decisions today are going to affect your life tomorrow. And, you know, I'm all for being present and I'm all for living in the moment. But living in the moment and being present does not mean that you only live for today, or that you have the mindset of you only live once, you know, because that's how hippies used to think, you know, and fat lot of good it did them, you know, the hedonism and the escaping issues and, you know, the drugs and just avoiding responsibility and living like a vagabond and all that kind of stuff. It's one or the other. You either play the game of, I do difficult shit today so I can have enjoyable shit tomorrow, or you basically say screw it all, you know, and sort of abdicate all of your responsibilities and just let everything sit there. So, you know, I guess I can't say that one is better than the other, but I certainly know the way that I prefer to live my life.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, if you think about, like you said, that short-term pain and that long-term pleasure, like, it's like you said, we all have a choice in how we want to live, but that, you know, that short-term, you know, like that situation that you've had in the past and what you've experienced and what I've experienced, you know, that when you're in it, you can't see a way out and it seems like a long time. And it does seem like forever. It does seem like there's no way out, but it's you know, that situation is going to make you stronger, and that short term might be a couple of years or 5 years or, you know, X amount of months compared to the rest of your life. And, you know, going through that, those stages, you might be able to use something from that experience to do something in the future with it. You know, similar to yourself, like similar to probably what I'm doing. If we hadn't have had those experiences, we might not be doing this. So we've chosen to take that and do something with that in a positive sense. And I think, you know, we all have a choice at the end of the day. I think we just need to be very mindful of what's going on. And some people might deal with things very early on. Some people might deal with things later on in their life. But then I think if you've got things going on, that's going to snowball into your job, into your relationships, maybe into your finances, you know, like you said, your health. It's a process. And like you said, life is always going to throw challenges. It's always going to be difficult. But then I think if life was easy, I don't think we'd be able to appreciate things the same. I don't think how would we grow? We wouldn't grow in life if we hadn't had tough situations thrown at us. And yeah, it'd
be pretty boring.
Sorry, you broke up.
Oh, no, I just said it would be pretty boring. You know, the things that make life interesting and worth living are the challenges that are thrown our way that then we have to overcome. Hope, love, the possibility of having a dream come true. You know, those are the things that make life interesting. It's like, you know, if Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant had never lost a championship, if they were champions from the time they entered, you know, the basketball arena, then people wouldn't be so drawn to them. You know, it's overcoming our adversity and our challenges that gives us character. And in order to be able to do that, you have to learn to manage your emotions. Now, managing and controlling your emotions does not mean suppressing them. It doesn't mean pretending that they don't exist. And this is a really important distinction. It means that the emotion is there and you let it be there and you allow yourself to feel it, but you control what you do about it. You control your reactions. You respond instead of reacting, right? If you're not ready to make a decision because you're in an emotional state, you put away your phone, you put away your computer, and you take a day or two to make that decision. You don't jump into it, and so forth and so on. So controlling your emotions, you can't overcome adversity if you don't learn how to manage and control your emotions. And if you're letting your emotions get the best of you every time, you're going to do a lot of stuff that you don't mean. You're going to say a lot of stuff that you don't mean. You're going to push a lot of people away from you that you don't want to. And ultimately, you will stay stuck in that challenge, whatever it is, much longer than you need to be. So the key is not to push down your emotions or pretend that they don't exist, but the key is to harness it and do the right thing about it. And if you're not ready to do something, that's fine, but then don't do anything. You know, don't lash out, don't lose your temper, don't make an irrational decision. Lock yourself in a room for a couple of days and say, like, I am so mad, so angry about this that just everybody needs to leave me alone, because otherwise I'm going to do something stupid. You know, that's fine. If that's what you need to do, then do that. But and that's a perfect example of controlling your emotions. You're fuming angry and you're allowing yourself to feel that way, but you're controlling your reaction and making sure that you don't do something stupid about it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's takes a lot of skill, doesn't it, and discipline, I think, in someone to do that. And I think we can super all hard. Do it.
It's super hard.
And I think, like, we've all made mistakes. We've all lashed out. We've all got angry. I don't know anyone who hasn't done that. I mean, I think I got angry once, and I think I punched the wall at one time. And, like, I thought I broke my finger. That has to go somewhere, but you have to sometimes take yourself out of that situation, recognize it's not whatever you're feeling or whatever you're experiencing isn't worth going out or you saying something and stopping yourself from doing that by taking yourself out of the situation, isn't it? And I think that's far more beneficial than, and that's self-control, isn't it? Ultimately, it's like self-control and recognizing, you know, you don't want to cause a greater ripple effect by saying something you don't mean. Because I think we can all get tired, we can all get angry, we can all say things. And then you realize afterwards, once you call off, oh, I'm really sorry, But, you know, you have to, it's like in relationships, you know, how you come back to one another if you've had a fallout, or, you know, and Tatum saying, oh, I'm sorry about, you know, what I said and recognizing it. But in the heat of the moment might be due to previous scenarios, tiredness, whatever it is. But like you said, you know, your emotional state and controlling that is super important, because you don't want your emotional state, if it's unstable, to affect other areas of your life, which then may make your emotional state worse. It's like, you know, like a cycle almost, isn't it?
So what are some of the things you do when you notice that you're in a negative emotional state and you're trying to control it and make sure that it doesn't make stuff worse?
What I tend to do is, I think I need my own time to recharge, if that makes sense. I feel like I need my own space. I have to remove myself from that situation to go away and think about how I'm feeling, what I need to do. And that might be to recharge by doing something for myself. It might be exercise to deal with that emotion. It might be taking myself away and communicating, you know, maybe with the other person, if it is involving another person. But having that space and time, I think, to get myself out, to recharge, to kind of gain my thoughts and think about stuff.
So you like to be alone when you're in that state and do something, you know, that will bring you clarity.
Yeah.
Is there anything you try to avoid doing? Like, do you try to avoid making a phone call or sending a text when you're overly emotional? Or do you try to, you know, avoid seeing the person that you're really upset with? You know, do you try to avoid drinking? Is there anything that you say, like, I know that when I'm emotional, I cannot do X, Y, or Z?
I think in the past, I have sent text messages when I've been angry. Saying that, yeah, even this year, there was a situation with, you know, a group situation, and I got frustrated and I sent like text. And then, so I think sometimes maybe I can get frustrated or angry and then impulsively send a text maybe. But I think I'm getting a lot more better now. I think if I type out the text and then I'm like, oh, hold up a sec, should I be sending this? No. You know, I'm more mindful with that now. Mm. If I feel upset or angry, I've noticed I'll eat probably more chocolate. Maybe I don't drink too much anyway, but I'll definitely have a few beers, probably more than I usually do. Okay. Yeah, or maybe procrastinate. Maybe if I feel frustrated or upset, I might not be doing the things that I probably need to be doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I ask this because I think it's really important for us to know our vices when we're emotional. Like for you, if you're really emotional, you might be tempted to eat chocolate or drink beers or send an angry text. So you try to be cognizant of that. You write out the text, but you don't send it. You know, maybe you give yourself a limit of 2 beers. You know, maybe you make sure that you don't stockpile too much chocolate in the house, because otherwise you'll eat it all. For me, my advice when I'm super emotional is sleep. You know, for whatever reason, when I'm in a really emotional state, I want to isolate and I want to sleep. And I put off my commitments, I'll cancel stuff, you know, I'll basically fall off the face of the map for like a day or two. I bounce back pretty quickly. That's something I've learned how to become good at. But I have to be cognizant of, you know, my vice of isolating and sleeping. And then, you know, not following through on my commitments, because that's my way of escaping. And, you know, the thing that I used to do, my vice used to be working or being productive when I was really emotional. Like basically I would pretend that I'm not upset about something and I would just work, or I would go about my day, you know, act as if everything is fine. And then like I would lose my temper and blow up. So before, I had to be cognizant that what I wanted to do when there was an emotional issue I was experiencing is pretend that it's not there and just kind of dig my heels in and double down on whatever I was doing as a way to escape. So all of these vices are escapes from negative emotion. And it doesn't mean that, you know, if you're listening to this, all of your vices are going to disappear overnight, but you at least have to be cognizant of what they are. And then, you know, as we keep saying, try to manage them and try to control them. And I think one of the biggest things is that if there is somebody who wants to help you, I can't for the life of me understand why people don't accept it. You know, it's like if you were drowning in the ocean and I threw you a life jacket, would you accept it? Of course.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow when you're in the darkest place of your life, your habits are terrible. You don't know, you don't have direction. You know, you're constantly in anxiety or constantly in a state of negative emotion. And somebody crossed your path who can help you with this, then it's like, no, I don't have the money, or I'm too busy, or I would rather just, you know, do whatever I'm doing. And that I think is just really, it is very bizarre and just causes so much pain, so much more pain.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's like, do you think it might be like a lack of self-worth or self-neglect, do you think?
I think that it's self-sabotage.
That's what I mean to say, yeah.
I think it's, you know, abandoning yourself and sabotaging yourself. And I think that above all, the strongest human instinct is for familiarity. And
yeah, that's a good point.
And, you know, things being the same. So no matter how terrible things are in our lives, we would rather they be the same than be different. Because it's the devil you know. The devil you know is better than the devil you don't. If I come into your life and I offer you help and I offer you solutions for a way to change and for a way to, for things to get improved, for things to improve, intellectually you say, oh yeah, that sounds great. But then when you recognize that that's going to change the landscape of your life, it's going to change your feelings, it's going to change your habits. And in 3 or 4 months, you might actually be feeling great. That sounds great on paper, but it's a very scary thing for people who have been used to feeling terrible for a really long time.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'll just touch on a past experience. Like when in my previous job, we had a participant, we call a client's participant, and he was unemployed. He was in homeless accommodation, temporary accommodation. We got him a job in a hotel with living in accommodation within the workplace. He was paid a good wage, nice place, good view. And a month or so into the job, he was self-sabotaging and complaining about things in the job when there's nothing to complain about. And he was complaining about his room being too small and things like this. But he wasn't paying that much on the staff accommodation anyway. But
the room on the corner and freezing cold was better.
Well, yeah, it's like, you know, we've got you out of this place, we've got you a job, you've got living accommodation, you don't have to pay, you pay the flat rate, that comes out of your wages, etc. And he self-sabotaged, and I mean, I don't work there now, but he basically, I think, wanted to go back to where he was originally and not have the job,
right?
And not have that independence. And it was so sad to see, because we pour that effort and work into helping him. But like you said, the devil, you know, in that those familiarity and maybe self-worth, you know, was stronger in him, you know, that overtook. He didn't want the healthy change.
Yeah, and it's such a bizarre concept to wrap your head around, because if you ask most people, you know, would you like your life to improve, whether you're homeless, a drug addict, or whether you're rich and living in a nice flat in London or anything in between, you know, if you ask most people, would you like your life to get better? They'll say, yes, of course, I would love to, you know, sign me up. But then when they really think about it and they realize that that means their life will be different, they don't want it, you know, and I've been in that position. Through my depression and my, you know, anorexia and my anxiety spirals and my debilitating physical illnesses that I've struggled through, I would tell everybody that I didn't want to be in this pain anymore. But not wanting to be in pain and wanting your life to be better are two different things. Because wanting your life to be better means that you want your life to be different. And if you want your life to be different, then that means you have to be okay with changing a lot of things. And that's very scary if you've been used to things being a certain way for so long. The homeless example that you gave is a really good one, because in Los Angeles, we have more homeless people than anywhere. You know, we've got more homeless people here than like in the slums of, you know, India. If you type into Google, you know, Los Angeles homeless problem, you'll see it's astounding. I think we've got
Skid Row.
Yeah, well, Skid Row is just one area, you know, but we've got hundreds
in general.
We've got hundreds of thousands of homeless people in LA. And most people think that the problem is that the government doesn't have beds or money or services for these people. That's not true. We do have beds, money, and services, social services, mental health counseling, drug addiction, you know, daycare, all kinds of stuff. We've got a whole, you know, we've poured billions of dollars into trying to correct the homeless crisis in Los Angeles. The problem is that human beings adapt. And if you've been homeless for 20 years, don't have a job, don't have anybody telling you what to do, can do whatever you want, wherever you want, whenever you want. The police don't bother you because they're scared to get in trouble. And I come along and I give you the promise of a better life, but it's a very different life, a life where there are rules, responsibilities, obligations, you know, and it's just different from what you're used to. You've been living a certain way for 20 years. That adaptation, the adaptation you've made to a familiar, consistent way of living is so powerful that it will keep hundreds of thousands of people living on the street without a toilet, right? Just like the example that you gave. The adaptation and the familiarity are so powerful. So the only way out of this is really wanting a different life, wanting it, desiring. Mm. And even though it's scary, having the courage to say, I don't know what's on the other side, but I know that it's better than this.
Mm.
Taking that leap of faith.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think that's so true. You know, taking that leap of faith and wanting that change and, you know, willing to take a leap of faith through difficult new situations, because if you know you change, anything new is going to present challenges and it's going to be uncomfortable, you know, whether that's going from homeless for 20 years to getting out of that to, you know, changing your life and doing, getting a job, etc., or whatever, or even like, you know, changing, any change really, isn't it? Like, I used to work in hotels for a long period of time. And then I then got more into, you know, the coaching and things like that. And like you said, it, you know, working in a hotel, I could do my eyes closed. It's familiar, you know, whereas just making that initial shift was intimidating, scary. And, you know, I'm still learning now, but whatever you want different. There's going to be those changes. There's going to be those challenges, but you will grow. You know, you're going to grow and develop through that change. If it's, you know, if it's healthy.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And going back to, you know, you were mentioning that you've had clients who are resistant to working with you, or, you know, resistant to accepting your help or whatever. What is your personal approach to people like that? You know, do you, you know, because as coaches and as therapists, I think this is the perennial challenge for us. How do you deal with a treatment resistant person? You know, do you continue to check in with them and try to build trust with them? Do you say, okay, come to me when you're ready, because I got to take my effort and, you know, put it elsewhere. You know, there are so many ways to approach this. But it's a real issue, because we do want to help people, especially when we meet someone that, you know, our heart goes out to. But we can only help them as much as they want the help.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, so yeah, how do you approach that?
If I tie it into my current role, with my current position for the job that I have, I mean, I won't go into too much detail, but my current role for a company I work for in the UK is health and wellbeing coach. So I focus on people's health and well-being, and we basically say we get somebody referred to us, you know, client, participant. I will explain to them, you know, what I can help them with, and I'll explain to them, this is to help you with health and well-being, and this is the benefits, this is what it involves. It'll be, you know, phone calls, it might be face-to-face, etc. This is what it involves, this is the process, and this is how often I'll contact you. This is how long it's going to be. And this is what I can help you with. And this is what we have to offer. And I'll always ask, is this something that you want? Is it something you want? You know, please tell me yes or no. And, you know, I almost provide that space for that person. And I would do that, whether that was with me working for myself or somebody, or for a company. I would explain what is on the table, what it involves, but it has to be some kind of push and pull either side. I'm here to listen to you, and I'm here to do my very, very best. But you have to kind of want to show up, ultimately, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's such a profound question. Is this something that you want, right? Because we want to help everybody. So when we jump into, you know, a meeting or a session with a prospective client, it's like, all right, let's hit this ground running. Like, where can we help you? How can we start making changes? But, you know, we don't always stop and realize that, like, they have to want this. You know, it's kind of like, if I walk into a restaurant, the waiter immediately assumes that I want alcohol, I want an appetizer, I want a main course, and I want dessert, you know? But the waiters don't do that. They say, you know, what can I get for you? And maybe if you say, I'll just have a cup of water, they're a little bit disappointed, but at least they said, I'll just have a cup of water. At least you know what it is. So, you know, when my clients, prospective clients, say to me, no, I don't want this, or it's not something I'm interested in, or whatever, you know, I have my opinions about it, but at least that way I know, and I'm not trying, you know, I can take the service that I have to provide, my skill set, my time and love and effort and energy, and direct it towards somebody who really does want it.
Yeah, definitely. And if it's that, you have to, it's those boundaries, isn't it, really? You know, you have to draw a line in the sand somewhere. Or if you maybe are working with somebody, there might just be, I don't know if you've ever found it, maybe just kind of coasting through. They're showing up but not really wanting to kind of make any changes. They're just probably doing it because maybe the family tell them to do it, or they there's a third party involved or something.
Right. Yeah. So
you got to address that, haven't you?
Absolutely.
As well, like, are you okay? Sorry.
No. I just said amazing stuff. This has been really profound.
Yeah. No, definitely. And is there anything else that you want to touch base on? Or I know we've cut for time.
Yeah. I think, you know, we covered everything, you know.
Yeah.
From changing your feelings, managing and controlling your emotions. And really wanting more for your life. You know, I guess the thing that I'll leave people with is everything comes down to this question: how badly do you want it? I want a lot of things in my life. I want money. I want a wife. I want kids. I want fulfillment. I want to help people. I want my dreams to come true. But I can't pursue all of those in full force 100% at the same time, right? I've got to pick and choose which ones I want to focus on right now. So the question is, if I'm focusing on making money, well, how badly do I want that? If I'm focusing on building a family, having a wife and kids, well, how badly do I want that, right? Because if you're focusing on 10 different things and just putting minimal effort into all of them, you don't want them that badly. You know, if you say you want a better life, but then you don't show up to your coach, or you don't spend the money, you don't make the investment or whatever, you don't want it that badly. And that's okay. You know, there are no judgments. You don't have to want the same things that I want. But you should ask yourself, the things that I say that I want, how badly do I actually want them?
Yeah, I think that's a really good note to end on, isn't it? I think, you know, how bad do you actually want it? And I think it's such a powerful question, because I think when you ask yourself that and you apply it to things that you want, it's quite like, you know, you put yourself under the microscope, don't you, really?
Yeah. I mean, one of the most powerful things that I ever learned, Adam, was that you can only want the end result as much as you want the outcome. I'm sorry. You can only want the end result as you want the process. You can't want the outcome, but not want the process. It's like, okay, I want to lose 10 pounds. If I want to lose 10 pounds, what's going to be required? I got to go on a diet and I have to go to the gym every day. Oh, I don't want to go on a diet and I don't want to go to the gym every day. Well, then you don't want to lose 10 pounds, because you're not allowed to only want the outcome, but not allow the process of getting there. Right. And so that's why I come back to, how badly do you want it?
Yeah, no, it's so true, isn't it? It's like, if you can't have the process, you can't not go through the pain to then not have that outcome that from the process, and you can't skip the process. You know, there's a staircase in front of you, isn't there? You know, in all of our lives, to whatever it is that we want to achieve, what we want. But it's in that process, and that we can look at, you know, how far we've grown and what we've done. And you know, it's that, like, pages of a book almost, isn't it? You know, it's like that story, you know, it's in that you can look back on where you started, where you progressed, what was difficult, and where you are now. And I think that's like a continuous thing, I think, you know, to self-reflect, to look at the process of where we are now and what we're working towards. And I think that you know, it can increase your confidence. It can make you feel happy knowing that you've been through those difficult situations and you've come out the other side. And, you know, life will then maybe throw something else at you. Then that'll be another process. And that's more growth and stuff if you take those steps forward. I think it's really true. I really believe you. And like, I was just thinking, like, as well, like, where can people find you on social media, like your website? Kind of, is there anything that you're working on? Because I know you you're coaching, you coach in different areas, and where can people find your help?
Yeah. So my website is just my name, kevinnahai.com, K-E-V-I-N-N-A-H-A-I. My Instagram is also my name, Kevin Nahai. And you can send me a message through my Instagram or through my website. And yeah, we can talk about some personal coaching if I can be of help to you. You know, otherwise go to Adam because he's the man. And I'm really looking forward to promoting this podcast and sharing our episode together and continuing to join forces, my brother.
Yeah, yeah, same here. No, I really, really appreciate everything that we're able to do. And I, you know, I really wholeheartedly love, you know, our chats, conversations, our podcasts. And, you know, I'll definitely put this out there and, you know, put people your way as well. And I look forward to, you know, next time. I wish you all the best. Brother.
Thank you so much. God bless you. I'll see you next time.
You're welcome.
Time.
You too, man.
Got it. Adam, got it. Positivity.